So, as I said, most of you have been here for a while will know something about Prison Network, but basically we've been going into prison, women's prisons now for 74 years. And no, I haven't been going in for 74 years, but I have been going in for over 30. So, yeah, and look, you know, I guess our role is basically to bring some hope. Some of what we do is just a remand support. So for women who had just arrived and they're very scared, I was speaking to a 19-year-old this week. I just had a phone appointment with her, and she said, "I don't normally come out of my room." She said, "I'm too scared. I'm so anxious." And she said, "And I'm looking at probably doing 8 years." And, you know, I really felt for that girl, and she was holding it together during the conversation. At the very end, she just burst out crying and was traumatised by what she'd done, the consequences, the impact on the victim, etc. It was an accident. And, you know, that's the sort of people that we talk with. And I often find that wherever I go to speak, which I don't speak that often, but I do here. But people say, "Oh, I want to, you know, tell us some stories." And I actually find that quite an overwhelming question, because my mind files through the thousands of people that I've known over the years and something about their story. So I thought I would just keep it simple today and perhaps as an intro to the passage that I'm going to look at today, just some of the women that I've dealt with in the last couple of weeks. And one of them is out of prison and has got two children, but she was raised by two alcoholic parents who were violent. And the dad was so violent that the mum was so violent when she was a child that the dad decided to leave the family, her with three other children, and move as far away as he could. So he moved to Perth. And the mother got worse once the dad left. And so she would often wake the children up at night and bash them around and all sorts of things. And half the time she wouldn't remember that. But the next day the kids would have to make up stories at school of why they had scratches on their face and bruises and things like that. And this particular girl says, you know, "I remember many times that she would, when she considered we were naughty," and she said we weren't naughty kids, but she would lock us out of the house with the dog. And she said, I have trouble getting that memory out of my mind. And this girl, in fact, she would go on holiday once a year to the dad's in Perth. And the second time she went with her other sisters, he sexually abused all of the girls. And eventually the mum said to the girls, "Well, I have to tell you something, your dad's died." And so there was a lot of mixed emotions there with the girls. But then 5 years later, the dad came and knocked on this girl's door. And the mother had lied that he died. And anyway, she was actually doing quite well, but then developed a drinking problem, not till she was like 30. And then she was in a relationship with a man who she'd met when she'd gone into prostitution, and she got pregnant, and he decided that he would go to Thailand to do what some men do while the birth of the baby was happening. And then she got pregnant to him again, and it's been a terrible story since. But you know, the hope is that right now, while we're standing here, she's at church after taking her to church last week, and she was keen to go back, and the church had been so welcoming. And that's a great thing. We always have hope, don't we? That God can turn things around. I was talking to another girl as an appointment on the phone. So some of our appointments these days, or our meetings with the girls, take place on Zoom or on the phone still because of COVID stuff. And I was talking to one girl a couple of weeks ago, and I'd had probably four appointments with her on the phone. And I said, oh, how's things going? She said, well, they were going good. She said, and I'm not a very emotional person. She said, but we had a group run, like a therapy group run this week. And in the group, we were talking about if our parents have had pride in us. And she said, and I just broke down crying. She said, and I never cry. And she said, and if I wanted to cry, I would normally just hold it in. She said, but I realized that the only time my parents, and particularly my father, ever told me he was proud of me was when I was selling a lot of drugs and making a lot of money. And she said, I remember he said to me, I'm so proud of you. And this girl's like 24, you know, and you kind of go, wow, you know, how it's such dysfunction and such, well, sadness, really. One girl that we got referred to, one of the things we have developed in the last couple of years is doing housing, because so many of the women get out of prison with nowhere to go. And so the cycle goes up. We get probably 10 referrals a week, and probably 8 of them will have written on the bottom, I desperately need housing, or I've been homeless for 5 years. And so one of the things that we do is we rent off people who might have investment properties, and we rent from them, and then the girl rents from us at a cheaper rate. But it's just life-changing. That's been an exciting thing to see. But at the end of last year, I decided to put in one girl who had cancer, and she was really very unwell. And the property that we had was right near Peter MacCallum Hospital. But just as I decided that, but I hadn't told the woman, I got an email from someone at the prison who said, look, there's one other girl I'd really like you to consider. Could you please consider her? And I'm like, oh, pretty much already decided. But anyway, I had this phone appointment with this girl, and she was 25 and had 5 children and had had her 5th by the time she was 18. And she just said, I've just got nowhere to go, and I cannot get my children back or move on with my life without anywhere to go. And I was like, oh, who do I decide? Who do I, you know, pick, whatever. So I eventually continued to go with the woman who had cancer. And unfortunately, this girl ended up dying, the 25-year-old. And you kind of go, wow, you know, 5 children now without a mum. I was also in a group last week, which was our Christian group. So we run a Christian discussion group as well as do other stuff. And I had a girl there who'd got a Bible. So she got her own Bible and been given to her by one of the chaplains. And she opened the Bible up, and I could see, you know, the old-fashioned style ones that have birth, deaths, marriages on it. And on the birth page, she had the whole page full that she'd filled out, and then the death page, she had the whole page that's full, and on the marriages page, she only had one name. And she said, you know, it was quite confronting for me that she realized, she said, in my whole life, she's 35, she said, I've never known anyone to be married. I said, no one ever? And she said, no, except one kid I went to school with, I heard he got married. And you go, wow, who's going to show them a different way? One girl I was speaking to in the last couple of days who was suicidal, I've spoken a few of those in the last few days, but she's come from a family of 2 alcoholic parents, so often generational issues, you know, and she's had a terrible time, terrible domestic violence as a child. Her mother's still an alcoholic, so she has to ring her before about 4 o'clock in the day, or her mum just a write-off. And her brother, she's only got one brother, and he passed away 2 years ago. He gassed himself to death. And she was just beside herself. But anyway, right now at this minute, she's at church. She's decided to go to church with one of our volunteers. and you just pray that God will turn lives around, and he can. But what I'd like to look at today is a passage, and I probably should have told you guys that, like, what passage, and you could have looked it up, but it's a passage that you'll all be familiar with. But I want to look at the story of the Good Samaritan. And what I want to do is, I don't know whether you've ever seen one of these, but this is the Poverty and Justice Bible. And what it does is it actually, and I'll show you, I should have also used the hands-free. But it outlines all the passages that are about poverty and justice in orange. And as you can see, that's a subject that's close to God's heart, and there's so many scriptures about that. You know, Proverbs 19:17 says, whoever is kind to the needy lends to the Lord, and he will repay them. And when we think of it, you know, of course, Jesus said that he came to bind up the brokenhearted and set the captive free. And one of the passages that I think Jesus makes a point about this is in the Good Samaritan, in Luke chapter 10. And, you know, a few years ago now, I'm not widely travelled, but I actually had long service leave, and a bit of a long story, but I ended up in LA, and I'd never been to LA before. And I hooked up with an organisation there, because I can't help myself even on holidays, with a place called the Dream Centre. And what we did at the Dream Centre, one of the things that these people, which is a massive welfare organisation, Christian, was go to Skid Row. And you may know a little bit about Skid Row, or you may have heard of it, but we went down there and they had a program where they would feed those who were living on the street there. And has anyone ever been there? Yeah, one person, okay. And so two. Basically, you literally step over people who are homeless on the footpath, and they're just everywhere. But one thing I noticed when we went there was that, and I don't mean to criticise the Dream Centre, but it really hit me, that they would go down, and they went down 5 days a week at lunchtime, and they would give out water and sandwiches and sometimes make some food and hand it out on the street. But it seemed to me that the team that did it didn't really know the people that they were ministering to. And I was like, how could you come here 5 days a week and not really know them? So while they were handing out the food, my friend and I, we just sat down and talked to people. And one guy said this to me, and I'll never forget it. He said to me, you know what? What these people do is good. He said, but to be honest, I could be fed 6 times over down here at Skid Row. He said, there's that many missions and everything, the handout food and everything. But he said, but do they know my name? Do they know my name? And, you know, it made me think, that guy is never going to die of starvation. But he more than likely could die of a broken heart. And nearly every person on those streets has either tried to kill themselves or thought about it or is planning to. And, you know, sometimes we just want to tick a box, don't we? Sometimes we want to be a little bit distant. But people need to know that they're noticed and they're valued and they matter. So we're going to read from Luke chapter 10. I know it's old-fashioned, but I used to love it when people brought their Bibles to church. We should bring it back in, shouldn't we? I like seeing you guys at the back there. But I'm going to read it. I'm sure that you know it, but I just want to draw out a couple of things about it. Luke chapter 10, reading from verses 25 onwards. An expert in the law of Moses stood up and asked Jesus a question to see what he would say. Teacher, he asked, what must I do to have eternal life? Jesus answered, what is written in the scriptures? How do you understand them? The man replied, the scriptures say, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, They also say, love your neighbours as much as you love yourself. I could just about sit down while we just think about that for a while. Jesus said, you've given the right answer. If you do this, you'll have eternal life. But the man wanted to show that he knew what he was talking about. So he asked Jesus, or another version, an NIV version says, but the man wanted to justify himself. We love to justify ourselves, don't we? I do. Wonder about you. So he wanted to justify himself. And he said, lost my place. So he asked Jesus, who are my neighbours? And Jesus replied, as a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, robbers attacked him and grabbed everything he had. They beat him up, ran off, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the road, but when he saw the man, he walked by the other side. Later, a temple helper came to the same place, or a Levite, your version might say. But when he saw the man who'd been beaten up, he also went by the other side. A man from Samaria then came travelling along that road, and when he saw the man, he felt sorry for him, and he went over to him. He treated his wounds with olive oil and wine and bandaged them. And then he put him on his own donkey and took him to an inn where he took care of him. The next morning, he gave the innkeeper 2 silver coins and said, please take care of the man. If you spend more than this on him, I'll pay you when I return. And then Jesus asked, which of these 3 people was a real neighbour to the man who was beaten up by robbers? And the teacher answered, the one who showed pity. Jesus said, go and do the same. It's obvious from the story that the religious people, the ones who are expected to act, just turned a blind eye. I wonder why you think they might have done that. Did I hear inconvenient? Inconvenient. They're all on their way to somewhere to do something. They're busy being religious, really. And it would have been very inconvenient, particularly if this man actually was dead, because that would have meant that those religious men on the way to the temple wouldn't have then been able to do that. They wouldn't have been able to enter the temple. It was risky. You know, I think we live in a world that's so risk adverse. It's all about not taking risks. When I read the Bible, I see that there's a lot of risk-taking going on. And it's actually okay. It would have been uncomfortable. What were they going to do with the guy? They can't take him with them. Maybe they've got a family, or they've got this, or they've got whatever else going on. And yet, the Samaritan, who the Jews we know despise, but why did they despise them? Some of you will know that the Samaritans were like a mongrel race. They'd it's many hundreds of years before, had intermarried with other nations and perhaps been affected by their religion. But they also only believed in the first 5 books of the Bible. So theologically, they were stuffed up as far as a Jew was concerned, and they didn't take on the whole gospel. But it was the Samaritan who was obviously on his way to somewhere, but he wasn't too busy. And sometimes we, like the religious guys in this story, are too busy doing the work of the Lord. That's what they thought. But what is the work of the Lord? These men would have claimed, like we would, to be followers and representatives of God. Yet often we don't understand his heart for the suffering and the downtrodden. The consequence of inaction by the Samaritan could have meant the man died. You know, I had a girl who I had a lot to do with, and she had a horrific history. She'd been adopted into a family that treated her very badly. And I won't go into all the details about that. But I remember she, at the age of 19, became a Christian, and I've never ever seen a change in anyone overnight like her. She was an angry, difficult young girl who you had to deal with in small doses. But the change in her was absolutely overwhelming. I remember that we started to go to church, and she had a little 9-month-old boy at the time. And this little 9-month-old got so used to praise music on that he would dance around with his hands in the air. And but I also remember that one day at church we were sitting there, and he was a very good little baby, but sometimes he made little sounds. And so we'd sit at the back, and this was in a big church. And one day, and the girl had very little education, and she struggled sometimes to concentrate in church. So that's why she didn't want to go into the, you know, cry room, whatever. And this lady turned around and said, "You need to take that baby into the cry room." And she was so taken back by that, she didn't go back to church. And she ended up hooking up with a man who she wouldn't have normally. That turned out badly. And then she got in a series of domestic violence situations, to the point where a couple of years ago, she gassed herself to death in the car. But, you know, sometimes if someone's not going to look out for these sort of people, it ends in death. That's the reality of it. I will tell this story if I can quickly tell it, but I worked with a family where all of them were in trouble with the police. The mother was a drug dealer, a big-time drug dealer. She was, like, absolutely infamous. In fact, so was her sister, and there was just, it was a crazy situation. And she ended up, one daughter was murdered because of drugs, and two others, a boy and a girl, died of drug overdoses. She had 5 children, and the two remaining were in prison. And anyway, she died. And I got a request from the girls in the prison: could you please go to this funeral on our behalf, because we care about our friend who's lost her mum? So I was like, oh, I've been to funerals like this before. There's no hope. Half the time people go there and they're under the influence of drugs. It's just dark and dreary. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, okay, I'll go. So I went to this funeral, and 10 minutes into it, this lady jumped up, and she was very well-dressed and well-spoken and everything. And she said, "Today is a very sad day because I've lost my friend." And I kind of looked at her and I thought, oh, you're not the sort of friend I would have thought this lady would have. And she said, "You know, maybe not all of you know this, but I met my friend sitting outside a shop one day in a shopping centre. And this woman, who was the drug dealer, had both legs amputated because of diabetes and was in a wheelchair and couldn't get her wheelchair into a shop with the person she was with. So she was sitting outside next to a bench. And this lady got talking to her. And they became friends, and as a result, this woman had become a Christian. And one night in a dream, Jesus appeared to her and said to her, 'You need to get baptized. It will be very significant for you. I want you to get baptized,' in her dream. So she woke up and straight away rung the woman who was the pastor's wife. So this lady, Sharon, was the pastor's wife. And so they organized a hoist and everything to have her baptized. And she talked about the change in this woman over the last few months of her life. And you go, wow, had that woman not taken the time to notice this woman who was obviously downtrodden, suffering, a battler in every way, she never would have been saved. And I tell you, I think about that funeral a lot because it encourages me. This family was as bad as you can get, I tell you. And yet this woman who you would frown upon, Jesus came and saved. And because this woman went out of her way. So the Samaritan picks the guy up, puts him on his donkey, takes him back to the inn or the motel room. That must have been awkward, sharing a room with someone you probably don't know. They're all bloody bruised, whatever. He pays for him and then he says, you know what? If there's any more costs when I come back, I'll pay for that too. You know, he really went the extra mile, didn't he? You know, people want genuine connection, not distant, oh, I'll just give you a meal and walk away. We need to get involved. You know, I've challenged by, and you probably don't realize this, but the title of my message is actually Clear Your Schedule. You know, I was challenged by a family I heard about a couple of years ago who cleared their schedule. They stopped doing all this, as they had kids and everything, they stopped doing all this sport and all this stuff they were running around to do to make themselves available to their community. They realized that their community was full of hurting people that were isolated, that no one knew about their hurt. And, you know, I didn't necessarily take that on board. But I want to tell you that during COVID, I did what most of Australia did and bought a puppy. My friend said to me, Loz, I want to get a dog for a kids for Christmas, but I don't know anything about dogs. I said, don't worry, leave it to me. I just lost my dog of 17 years. So don't worry, I'll get you a dog. So within 24 hours, I didn't have her a dog, but I had me one. And I literally hung the phone up from the lady I got the dog from because, of course, I couldn't see the dog, had to do it over the phone. I said, what have I done? Anyway, this dog, unlike my last one, is super social. And in COVID, there was nowhere to go but the local park, which is 200 metres from us. At that time, I just thought I was taking the dog to the park. But what's happened was, despite the fact I've lived in the same house for 22 years, I never knew anyone in my community. Now I know all of them. I can't walk more than 50 metres without going, oh, hi, how you get? Oh, how's your kid? You know, blah, 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 blah. And one of the guys that I've met is a guy in a wheelchair. And he has trouble speaking. He's got no movement in his legs or one of his arms. And I got to know him quite well, and he's just the loveliest guy. And one day I was down there on a long weekend, and a friend that I used to work with 20 years ago turned up. And I was like, oh, you know, how are you, blah, blah. So we started walking laps of this oval. And as we did our second lap, the guy in the wheelchair comes down, and his name's, no, I won't tell you his name. And so he comes down with his dog. And I said, oh, this is my friend. And I introduced the two of them. And it was actually Easter. And my friend says to him, oh, you know, what have you been doing at Easter or anything special? And he says, no, no. And she says, oh, you know, does Easter mean anything to you? And he says, oh, not really. He said, you know, maybe when I was a kid or something, but not really. And she said, do you live by yourself? And he said, no, but I do in here. And she said, have you ever been to church? And she turns to me, I haven't seen her for 20 years, and says, you need to go to church with her. I was like, so I said, oh, yep, okay, yep, yep, would you like to do that? And he says, So in the end, he decides to come to church, and so he started to go to night church. I used to go in the morning, but I started to go at night for him. this week, a year later, he's getting baptized. And he wrote this. When I was 2 years old, I fell from a football grandstand, 17 feet. My dad rushed me to the hospital where I was declared clinically dead. But God had other plans for me. He said, not yet. And he wanted me to be his eyes and a messenger. When they stabilized me enough, they took me into theatre where the doctor operated on my head. But the doctor accidentally hit the right side nerve, and that's how I got an ABI. Then they took me into recovery, and then they put a whistle in my mouth to see if I could breathe okay. Then I stopped breathing, and my dad went over to the door, opened it up, and said, sorry, this is a little bit hard to read. It's exactly what he wrote. Opened it up and said, come on, he's gone. The nurse came in and said, no, he's just resting. Then I started breathing again. And then when they got me stabilized enough, they flew me to the Royal Children's, where I was in a coma for 3 months. My dad said to the surgeon, turn the life support off. But he said, sorry, I can't do that. I give life. I don't take it away. At that point, his parents got him, when he had the accident, his parents got him baptized, but it didn't mean much to me. And he said, at that stage, I stopped believing in the great man until now. Now he's in my heart and in my soul, and I never want to lose that. He saved me, and my friends and my brother saved me from suicide, and now I love the big chief. But, you know, sometimes we just have to be available, don't we? And we have to see the people who are unseen. And I guess I just want to finish with what Jesus said at the end. He said to the lawyer who asks him, so who do you think was a neighbour? And he says, the man who helped him. And he says, go and do likewise. Go and do likewise. You know, if there are people who are unseen, people who are so downtrodden. One of the other families I've got to know, they've got a child who's anorexic and also transgender. And the issues that is creating in the whole family is so, so hard. And that this week the lady rang me in tears and said, can you help? You know, we just need to be available, don't we? Go and do likewise. I'm just going to pray. God, we just thank you that you love the downtrodden. God, that there is always hope. That God, just as you've chased us down, you chase them down. And Lord, I just pray that we would indeed know what it means for us personally to go and do likewise. And God, that will mean different things for different people here. But God, your heart is with the hurting and the broken and those who despair of life. And God, we pray that we would be people of hope who give even when it's sacrificial, that change and life might come. So we just pray, Lord, that you would speak to us and we would hear what you're encouraging us to do, to go and do likewise. In Jesus' name, amen.